Star Court Study Hall contains spoilers for seasons 1 through 4 of Stranger Things and for Stranger Things, The First Shadow. This episode may also contain graphic content and language not suitable for all listeners.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, unless otherwise stated, and all content and characters are property of Netflix and the Duffer Brothers.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Marina.
And this is Star Court Study Hall. Afternoon, evening, everybody. We are back, and I've decided what this week's episode is going to be about.
She picked a topic.
I picked a topic with Marina's help this week. This was something we were going to save for the end of season 4.2 of the podcast, but we thought, why not start it now? We have some other things that we want to talk about later. So we are back this week with our VFX, visual effects breakdown for season 4.
I feel like it's a good spot because, like, we were talking about the gates and the fleshiness and the upside downy sandwich.
Yeah.
So I feel like it makes sense to put it in this spot.
I agree. So we're going to talk about a couple different things today. We've done this with season 3 already.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's going to be a little bit different because season 4 was much bigger in terms of visual effects. Season 4 has more than 4,000 visual effects shots spread over about 13 hours across 9 different chapters.
Jesus.
Yeah. And 28 different VFX vendors contributed to the season. So it wasn't just one, like, company doing this. It was 28 different companies because there was just so much.
I feel like for season 3, there was definitely not 28,
no,
right?
No, there was a few, but not...
It was like a handful.
Not 28, for sure.
Okay.
I'm going to read off the names of a couple of these vendors just because it might come up throughout. So some of the vendors for the season included Rodeo FX, we've heard of them. Lola VFX will come up as well. And then Crafty Apes is a company we've heard of before. And I think they assisted with season 3 as well. So those ones will probably come up. There were many, many others. This is a quote from Julian Airy, a VFX supervisor from Rodeo VFX, and he said, "With these 9 monster episodes, we have delivered one of the most ambitious projects in Rodeo's history." So,
wow.
They're very proud of this. The estimated budget for season 4 per episode was around $30 million. I believe that's just the production budget. And then that would add up to an overall season budget of $270 million.
Yep.
For reference, season 3's budget was around $10 million an episode, and season 2's was around $8 million.
I love seeing the growth of this.
I know. It makes me proud of them.
Yeah. I feel like season 1 was 6, but I could be mistaking that.
That feels right.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
VFX supervisor Jabbar Raisani points out that every shot of Vecna's mind lair and an expanded upside down required VFX in season 4. And in general, he says, "We had multiple climaxes and sequences that involved fully digital or CG augmented characters. So there's a lot of storytelling on the show that requires an extensive amount of VFX support."
So is the implication of that that, like, when they show us the wide shots of the upside down, like the Creel house on the hill, like, is that all to show any kind of expanded upside down?
Yeah, I think, like, that's like 99% CGI, pretty much all of those upside down shots.
I can imagine the Skull Rock area was like a set.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Versus like the shot of the Wheeler house in the distance.
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
I know. Pretty wild.
That is.
So I decided to choose a couple different visual feats from season 4. When I did the season 3, I know. I don't know why I described
feats.
It like that. Feats.
Feeties.
Feats. But when I did season 3, I kind of chose specific, like, creatures, I guess. So for this one, I decided to choose, like, creatures, but also kind of, like, scenes, landscapes, things like that. Because there's just so much more in this one.
Yeah.
Plus, there's a lot more information out there about season four, about the sequences, about even like the practical effects. There's so much information about that out there for season four. Hmm. So we're going to talk about that too a little bit.
Cool.
So let's get into it. So the first visual feat.
Oh, yeah, he sure
he
is.
He sure does have visual feet.
No.
Is Vec nasty?
Vec nussy.
Ew. So there's a lot of images in this document that obviously you cannot see currently, but we will post as many of them as we can on Instagram so that you can see them as well. All right. So visual effects supervisor, Michael Mayer. M-A-Y-E-R.
You know that tombstone?
Yeah. That one says M-Y-E-R-S, I think. But
I thought it just said Y-E-R-S, so people thought it said buyers.
Oh, interesting.
Remember, yeah. You could only see, like, the back end of it?
Yeah. Well, anyway, visual effects supervisor Michael Mayer began providing Vecna concept art in 2019. So this has been an ongoing process. And the monster was fine-tuned in later discussions between the Duffer brothers, the visual effects team and special effects designer, and makeup effects department head and prosthetics designer.
Oh, Jesus.
There's a lot. This person's name is Barry Gower. So that prosthetics designer, special effects, makeup department head. Barry Gower is a 3-time Emmy Award winner for his work on Game of Thrones. So he's pretty good. In an interview, actually, with Barry Gower, he said that the DBs reached out to him after seeing his work on Game of Thrones and wanted him to be the prosthetics maker for Vecna.
That's awesome. I didn't watch Game of Thrones.
Me either. But I saw, like, the thing he was referencing in a clip, and I was like, oh, that does kind of look like Vecna style a little bit. Yeah. In an interview with Julian Airy, he said that they used Mayer's concept art to create 3D renderings, which were then sent to a special 3D printer, along with JCB's measurements, to make the preliminary Vecna suit.
I love that this stuff was already underway in 2019 when season 3 was just coming out.
I know. That's wild to think about.
It is.
Which means they had all this in mind.
They knew.
Yeah.
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 For sure.
That's true. I didn't even think about that. This thing is horrifying. So here, here it is emerging from the water. It's so they casted all these different parts. Well, they were 3D printed like this all together, and then they were all like all the individual parts were covered in like soap, so that when it soaked overnight, the soap reactivated, so all the different parts came apart again. I don't know. That's what it sounded like to me. Anyway. There he is, emerging from his water.
It's really detailed.
It is. It's creepy. Here's a quote. I digitally sculpted just about every option just so we could see it in a turntable and get an idea of how different lighting would look. In the end, it came down to 3 different choices, and we settled on a version that Barry Gower then made into a beautiful, practical sculpt.
Can I, like, buy this sculpture?
I know.
Like, where is this sculpture?
It's literally just a gigantic, life-sized, like, 3D printed Vecna.
Yeah, like, is that, like, on a lot somewhere? Like,
for sure.
Are they going to auction it off after the series is over?
It's so creepy, and it just emerges from the water. I don't like it.
It's like the cardboard cutout of Freddy, except this is a 3D printed life-size Vecna.
Yes. So I thought that this was really interesting, though. They 3D, like, rendered these guys and then put them on a literal, like, turntable in their program with lighting coming from different angles. So you can see where, like, the shadows and the highlights would fall in real life.
Right.
So I thought that was really interesting, and it's going to come up later when I talk about another friend of ours. But it's really interesting that they did this with a lot of the different CGI creatures that they use in the show. Then Mayer said about the process of applying the Vecna suit. It took Barry and crew hours and hours to apply the practical suit on actor Jamie Campbell Bauer. Many different molded parts came together on his body to form the base of the costume. It is estimated that the application of this thing took somewhere around 8 hours. 8 hours. And then wait, it would take another 2 to remove it after he'd been done shooting for the day. So this man had a 10-hour workday before he set foot on the set.
Holy shit. I wonder how many hours of actual filming he did in this outfit.
Seriously.
Like, 8 hours to put it on and then 2 more to remove it. I feel really bad now making fun of Vecna. Mm-hmm. Like, this is so much work was put into this guy.
I'm gonna say, honestly, this did make me appreciate Vecna a little bit more.
Yeah, like, obviously he still looks like a Grinch. Like, that's just the whole way that the body is and all.
I know.
With his little butt. But, like, I just, this is so much effort and time.
It's wild.
And mapping this out 3 years in advance, and we're just sitting here like, Vecna, see? Like, I'm so sorry, Vecna.
Sorry, Barry Gower. Sorry, JCB.
Sorry, sorry, everyone involved, okay?
So, I am just sorry.
I am just, that is so much time.
I know, it's wild. So I did find a list of the process of how they would apply the Vecna suit.
Okay.
So the Vecna suit is actually about 25 to 30 different individual pieces. So here is the order of operations that I found. So step one, bald cap / shave head, clean skin, vac form top head, comma, mark.
What is vac form?
I have no idea. I'm sure someone out there does, but I don't know. Next is vac form face, comma, mark. The mark I understand, because I'm guessing they're marking different parts of his face for like where it's gonna go.
I thought it was like assigning this to Mark.
None of these other things are assigned. Anyway, glue neck to bottom neckline, comma, under tension. Pull on foam trousers.
Where do we get foam trousers?
Lying down, glue on back, stand up, do tension, popper to trousers. I don't know what any of this means. Lying down, glue on front, stand up, do tension, popper to trousers once again.
Okay, so lay JCB down, glue on the back, stand him up, do tension,
whatever that is,
and then popper to trousers.
Of course, popper to trousers. And then my personal favorite step is trousers off.
Get him out of here.
Get these pants off.
This guy doesn't need pants.
He puts on the foam trousers, and then 2 steps later, trousers off. Then
that must be so they have like a, they know where to bring the top parts to. Probably. You know what I'm saying?
You're probably right, yeah. Okay, next is standing glue upper right arm, not bottom edge. So I guess at this point he has to stand, and they're going to put the glue on his upper right arm, but not the bottom. Oh, this is
does
wild.
He have to wait for all this glue to dry? I wonder. That part of the process?
Maybe. Maybe it's like it just has to get like tacky, like eyelash glue kind of.
Is he naked under this outfit?
Mostly, yes.
I can't imagine this was good for his skin.
No, he's got glue all over him. That's awful. He probably has to have a full body shave every day.
I would be razor burned to death.
I know. Okay, next we have glue shoulders over arms, chest back.
Okay.
All right. Then he's going to sit down. I guess that's why he has to take the trousers off so he can continue sitting. Because I don't think he can sit in that thing.
But the picture of him drinking Starbucks.
Oh, was he in the sitting? Oh, okay. Never mind.
Wasn't he in the suit?
I think so. I was going to put that in here, but I had too many pictures. Okay, next is paint right arm, elbow, and inner elbow. So I guess
because his right arm isn't a prosthetic. Only his left arm is the prosthetic,
yeah, I
right?
think so. I think part of it, I don't know, whatever.
Like maybe the top part?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Interesting. Because part of his arm is like exposed flesh. So, yeah, they're just painting it. Okay. And then glue on right forearm, paint skin, inks hand, glue on nails. Slay.
Glue on nails.
Next is glue top head, then glue.
That's the egg part.
Glue top head, then glue chin, then glue face, then paint up green nose. Cause
paint up green nose.
They have to green screen out his nose.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. So they paint his nose green so that they can later remove it and put those nostrils. Okay.
Horrifying. Pull on trousers. So trousers coming back. Next, we have feet.
Just feet. Those have got to be something he steps into, right? Like he stands in little feety
shoes. Probably. And then left hand. teeth.
Why have I never processed that Vecna has teeth?
I know. Until I started watching this stuff, I didn't understand what they were talking about. But he's wearing, like, kind of like Invisaligns, basically, over his teeth that have, like, they look decayed.
Why does he need teeth?
I mean, he's a human.
But they don't eat.
Well, that's why his teeth are decayed.
Because he doesn't eat?
Or brush his teeth.
I don't think that's how teeth work.
I don't know. Well, eventually your teeth are going to decay if you don't eat. Or don't brush them. Mm. Anyway. Finally, we have contact lenses. So he's wearing, like, I did not realize this, but he's wearing contact lenses, like, that make his eyes kind of, like, milky.
Yeah. They look, yes.
I didn't.
Milky is a great word.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Like, it's kind of like a lightened version of what happens to the victim's eyes. Okay, our last two steps are connect tentacles to shoulders. So connecting that head and shoulder thing, I guess. And the last step is my favorite. And I know I said that before, but this one's really my favorite. And it is slime up.
Slime them up.
Slime them up. And do you know what that slime is? It's KY.
I don't.
It's lube.
Like lube?
Yep. Yeah.
Like they lube up JCB?
Yep.
Lube him up.
He's lubed.
That KY jelly.
Man's is lubed.
Was he?
Yeah, that's quite a process. You can see why it takes 8 hours.
It took us 8 hours just to read it. Imagine actually doing it.
So Barry Gower said that instead of doing a full rubber monster suit, they wanted to create the Vecna suit using a lot of different prosthetics, treating the costume more like a jigsaw puzzle in order to allow for more realistic movement. Because he also said that when it's, you know, the pieces are like too big and they have to move a lot, sometimes there can be like buckling in the rubber, you know, like it doesn't stay flush to your skin. So yeah, there's about 25 to 30 individual pieces of the suit. And he said that just the head and shoulder pieces probably weighed somewhere around 22 to 33 pounds.
How much did he make? I need to know.
Right, this man, I hope he was paid because this is wild.
Sadie made a lot for season 3. Natalia Dyer's only made $150,000 per episode for season 3. I don't know why this isn't giving me season 4. I'm just curious. Like, I just want to know how much he made because this is insane.
I know.
The amount of time.
That's so heavy. And he has to walk around in that thing. And the other thing about this, too, that I thought was really interesting that I hadn't considered is that Vecna is a villain that we see in pretty decent lighting a lot of the time. So you see a lot of him. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can't really hide these, like, you know, the rubber buckling or things like that. You can't hide that in shadow. Like, he's lit.
He's sure is.
He is. So something else I thought was really interesting about the Vecna prosthetics that I found out is that they're able to inject the individual pieces with silicone in order to make them firmer or softer, thus also lighter or heavier, hence the variation in the poundage before.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like if they wanted a particular part to be like super squishy, they could inject silicone into it to make it like really, really soft.
Okay.
So like the pieces around like his like joints and things that would move a lot were a lot softer because they needed to be. So I thought that was really cool. JCB said that he did a lot of experimenting with the way that Vecna would move and use that creepy, terrifying hand of his. I also found out that Matt and Ross, the DBs, were quite adamant about this distorted hand. So JCB wanted to make sure he was using it to its full potential, I suppose.
I mean, he can't use it. He's he doesn't have a penis, so he can't use it to its full potential.
You're so right.
Okay.
Thank you.
I find it bizarre that they rubbered out and mapped out and made this whole thing. And I just want to know, like, what conversations were happening. They were like, well, what are we going to do about his dick? Where are we going to put that? Does Vecna have one? Like, these conversations had to have in practicality. Like,
is he going to have a penis? Where did it go? Is it covered in vines? Like, where is it?
We need an explanation. I don't care about anything else in season 5. That's the only thing I want to know.
Where is Vecna's penis?
It's important.
Well, speaking of that creepy hand, the long-ass fingers in the creepy hand were originally made using mechanical finger extensions on every finger. Turns out it didn't look that great on camera, though. So Julian Airy said that every time we see that creepy hand on screen, it is mostly CGI.
I feel like it would look a little Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah. Yeah, they said it didn't move quite fluidly enough. It wasn't right. Something else really interesting, though, that I learned in this interview is that Barry Gower said that when they got the mechanical finger extensions, they tried them out, like, and would wear them for a couple minutes at a time. And then, like, their hands would cramp so badly. And they were like, how is JCB going to wear this thing for hours? And then they said he came and put it on and he wore it for hours and was fine. So
he's a rock star.
He is. I mean, literally.
Literally.
Yes, he is. Also, a fact that I just absolutely lost my mind over. I mean, I was laughing. I had tears when I saw this. And this has to make it to the Instagram. Animation supervisor Scott Winthrop Holmes said that the attic vines would give the animators a lot of trouble. So something they did in a few shots where, like, you see Vecna kind of being suspended in the attic with the vines. Something they did in a few shots was completely cover his physical body. So, like, JCB's whole body was just cut out. So it's really just JCB's head and the rest is CGI. And this image I just took from this YouTube video is just Vecna's head floating in the attic. And I love it.
Oh, my God. I love that. It's reminding me of the beach ball from season 3.
Yes, that's what it's like. Scott Winthrop Holmes also said that the DBs gave them Hellraiser as a reference, which, okay, I'm not familiar, but apparently that means that the vines should inflict pain upon Vecna when he plugs in to his attic vines. Am I dumb, or did I completely miss that, like, those were supposed to be painful? Did you know those?
No, I don't think that's apparent, but it's, I mean, maybe there's a couple scenes when you see them go in and he, like, blah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, they said, which, like, when I looked at it, I was like, oh, this makes sense, okay, but I never really noticed before. But the vines in the attic actually have, like, spikes on them, like barbs, kind of, so that when you put it in, it hurts to pull it back out, I guess. So that's how Vecna can, like, stay suspended.
Okay, so they hold him up.
Yes.
I like that detail, that it's painful.
Yes, me too. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that in an interview, Millie and JCB talked about how the first time Millie saw Jamie in his full Vecna getup, she burst into tears. She said she thought it was going to be more CGI. She didn't realize it was, like, going to be fully just him.
Yeah.
And she said Jamie had to give her a hug so they can continue. Oh, me too. I'm so scared and I need a hug from JCB too.
Terrified. Ah.
Please hold me. In your full Vecna suit, I guess.
That's how you like it. You can't do anything, but, you know, it's fine.
All right. So that's,
oh boy,
that's all I wanted to mention about Vecna's process. You'll notice that in these different things that I mention, I kind of stop short of talking about the CGI process, and that's because I don't know anything about it.
That's fine.
Yeah. So, you know, everything except that.
Okay.
So let's talk about Millie's double. I decided to just talk about this very briefly. I don't have a ton about it, but I just wanted to touch upon it because it is an interesting visual effect.
It sure is.
It is interesting, and it is definitely a visual effect. So, in an MTV interview with Millie, she talked about how this de-aging thing happened. So she spent 3 days at the Lola VFX studio in a contraption called The Egg. It is basically like a stage with replicated set lighting where they take very close-up video of your face in order to do facial mapping. Then these facial maps are used to be superimposed onto another actor in post-production. Here's a picture of The Rock inside it.
That's look like an egg at all.
It doesn't look like an egg at all, but there it is.
Was wondering.
Although I kind of see it. See, like, the curvature of the lighting, kind of.
When I think of an egg, I think of the thing that Lady Gaga arrived in that one time,
which I saw in person in Vegas.
Oh,
it was really cool.
Was that the Grammys?
Yeah,
was
I think
that the
so.
Okay, the VMAs. I don't know. Okay.
I don't remember. It was one of them. But anyway, so then these images of Millie's face were essentially deepfaked onto actress Mardi Blair's face, making her look like a young 11 if you squint really hard. This is my favorite. Here's a quote from Michael Mayer, our friend. Mayer praises the astounding de-aging of Young Eleven by Lola VFX. He observes, "It's interesting to me that some people still think we found unused footage of Young Eleven from season one and just repurposed it. It's a testament to how well Lola did on the face replacements. We started by shooting our wonderful stand-in, Marty Blair, who would act out the scene completely, and then we employed the help of our friends at Lola to perform an egg shoot, capturing footage of present-day Millie Bobby Brown, acting out each scene as Marty had, and then doing a full face replacement in post. It was one of the hardest things we did on the show, especially with moving cameras and matching the consistency of her age and look across several shots."
Okay. All right. I think that's interesting. I mean, it's definitely uncanny. Like, not in the greatest way.
No. In, like, a medium way.
I think they get away with it a little bit because it's like you're seeing it in the context of a memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like with that information, you're a bit more forgiving because you know how inaccurate memories can, I don't know. I just feel like they get away with it because of the context that it's in. Like if they were to actually throw us into a flashback and try to make us believe, like,
yeah. Okay. That's actually so true.
Yeah.
I feel like too, it kind of lends itself to like, there's sort of like a dream quality of all of this that's happening.
For sure. Yeah.
So you're a little forgiving of things that don't really make a lot of sense.
Right. And yeah. They start us off with the loop of the well. So you already know that you're like not in
the right
place, kind of. I don't know how to put it.
Yeah. No, I get you. So honestly, there wasn't a ton of information beyond that about, you know, the face replacement process. So let's move on.
Should be interesting to see how they deal with this for season 5.
I know.
With Will.
I know. All right, so next we're going to talk about the Mind Layer / the Dear Billy sequence.
Okay.
All right. So, of course, most of this involves CGI processes that I do not understand, but I'll talk about what I can. So the set for Vecna's Mind Layer basically just looked like a big open warehouse with just some fragments of the finished product that we see at the end. So, like, there's some things that are there physically on the set, but not everything is. A lot of it is green screened out. Or blue screened? There's a blue screen in here.
It does look like a blue screen, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. When Max is being dragged away by Vecna's vine after she first tries to run away, that was her stunt double connected to a wire by the ankle and actually being dragged across the floor. Wow. But right before that, when Max falls hard on the ground face first, that is actually Sadie falling onto a big pad. But she does the first part of that stunt and then gets dragged away the stunt person gets dragged away.
And this is like right before she's like mounted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. A big theme throughout this research is that if there's one thing that the production crew, the DBs, everybody at Stranger Things loves, it is practicality and any organic material, any chance you can get in a shot.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like in the Mind Layer scenes, the ground was really covered with a shallow puddle of water and fake blood.
That's helpful.
Really gross, but it really does help the illusion, right?
Yeah.
Additionally, in this same behind the scenes video, director Sean Levy talked about the Creel House staircase in the Mind Layer and how that also being real helped fill out the realness of the space.
Yeah, so, like Nancy descends that.
Yeah, that's a real staircase that she descends. That's so true.
That's cool.
In an interview with production designer Chris Trujillo, he explained that many of the pieces of the house we see in the Mind Layer are also practical. So they just had these giant segments of the Creel House actually built to add in some more reality. So I have a picture here of like, it's like the top quarter, basically like the roof with all of the dormers and everything of the Creel House.
I wonder why they needed that specific part of the roof.
Yeah.
Or why that specific part of the house.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe for the shots of like the demobats on the roof or I don't
know.
Okay. Some other practical effects used in the Mind Layer were Chrissy and Fred's corpses. These were real dummies. They were enhanced in post with like more blood and, you know, to look a little creepier. But they were real and they were dripping glycerin. Yeah.
Ew.
Right. It's giving House of Wax.
Very much so.
Yes.
Great movie.
Something that is not real, though, is when Max gets strangled and restrained by all the vines. All of that was CGI. So she's not really being held or restrained by anything.
Okay.
Yeah, she is just that good.
So she's just standing on something in that position, but there's nothing actually holding her in that position.
Nope. Nope.
What? Do you see Vecna in the background of this picture?
Yes. That made me laugh out loud.
Why does he look so short? Look at him. He looks
short king. Stubby. I feel like that's just Jamie watching, like, off screen.
Yeah, of course. Unless they, like, dragged in the 3D printed thing for no reason.
No. That's definitely... but, like, he's not, like, in character, I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's just standing there, like, watching. Why does he look like that?
I don't know. I can't.
Oh, God.
I can't with Vecnasty. And then I don't really have anything, like, specific about this, but I just thought this parallel was really cool of Sadie running and nothing behind her. And then they add in all this amazing stuff in post.
That, like, disintegrates behind her. She's running towards the light.
So cool.
Right?
Yeah.
That is so cool. I love how in the pre, like, the actual shot, she's very red. But then in post, they've made her less red. Like, they've color corrected her.
Oh, yeah.
And made the background the correct color.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to move on to our final visual feat.
Okay.
And my favorite, which is the Demogorgon fight. In a 2022 interview with the DBs, they mentioned how the season one Demogorgon was heavily focused on making sure that they could accomplish what they needed to practically. Man in a suit style.
Yeah. So
they were really concerned with making sure that they could have a person in a suit playing the Demogorgon. But in this season, they had a bigger budget, VFX resources. Ross Duffer said, what we really wanted to do with this season was, okay, so he's always been in shadow. We haven't been able to really show what this creature can do, really, in terms of movement, in terms of how he attacks. We wanted to go, okay, let's let this thing loose and see what it can do.
So was this demo anything in a suit, or was this guy fully CGI?
He's fully CGI.
Okay.
Yes. This demo is fully CGI. They also stated that there was no motion capture used for the fight sequence either. So they never did, like, a guy in a suit doing, like, you know, the motion capture suit with all the dots on it. They never did that.
Okay. Wow.
I know. It's pretty impressive, right? I know. Honestly, the Demogorgon is probably one of the most impressive visual effects, I would say.
Yeah.
They were really married to the practical effects in season one, of course, though they did say that for the few things they did need to use CGI for in season one. So, like, the Demogorgon bursting through the classroom door or the middle school wall. The Duffers said that when they tried to do it practically, it had a Mystery Science Theater kind of quality to it.
What is Mystery Science Theater?
It is, like, an older show that is, like, a fake movie review show, kind of.
Okay.
And it's just very, like, campy, bad special effects. Yeah.
Got it.
The VFX teams wanted to make sure that the Demogorgon would look as real as possible this time because we were going to see so much of him.
Yeah.
So, like I mentioned earlier for Vecna, they did all sorts of models for all the CGI creatures, Vecna and the Demogorgon included, in different lighting and angles to make sure that all the shadows and highlights of him would be realistic as he moved. So, they literally, like, spun this 3D model and shone lights on it from every direction to see what that would look like. This is a quote. In season four, we now experience the Demogorgon in the light, performing a lot of actions in any type of framing. So we needed to update the asset to a 2022 standard and make sure we could film it anywhere without having to hide it in the dark. Our first step into this rehaul was slightly changing its morphology to allow for new actions, as we needed to make him run on all fours, slash prisoners, and jump around. So we did animation tests to see what kind of morphology changes we would need. Once we established our new proportions, we started to sculpt much more detail into the asset and redo the texture to support close-ups and adding many more scars coming from its captivity.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so to me, I thought that kind of explained why suddenly this thing is, like, 9 feet tall when before it was probably, like, 7. They changed, like, where its ankles are so that it can, like, stand more upright but also go on all fours.
Mm.
So I just thought that was really interesting that they actually had to change this thing's biology for this animation sequence.
Yeah, or it wouldn't have made sense, I feel like.
Yeah. They also said that the basic process for bringing our friend to life was that the animation studio first sent back those creepy, gray clay-looking renderings, which there's a picture of up here, mm-hmm. just to show what it would generally look like. And then the DBs gave their notes on the animation sequence, and one of them that they said was, "I want him to roar longer." After that comes the rendering stage, where they add things like skin texture, the snow interacting with him.
Oh, the snow.
Yes. Lighting, the spit, all of that. And that really brings him to life.
Demo spit.
Yes.
Jonathan is very familiar with that.
Oh, yes, yes. So the actual stunts that you see are done pretty much just like you'd think. They use stunt people for the scene as opposed to regular actors. So pretty much all the other prisoners you see other than Hopper and Dimitri are stuntmen.
Okay.
The stuntmen were hooked up to wires and were being thrown around, yanked around to make it look like they were being swiped and grabbed and thrown by the Demogorgon.
Nice.
And here's some storyboards that I found of what this is supposed to look like. I thought it was kind of cute, actually.
They have a man in a green onesie.
Oh, yeah, there he is. As for the choice to make the Demogorgon fight pretty much framed like a single shot, the DBs said that their goal was to really get the audience to feel like the Demogorgon was now entering our space and not that he was just another actor.
Okay.
Which I really liked.
Yeah.
They said it ended up being about 3 or 4 cuts, so they couldn't really do it all in one, but they wanted to really give us the feeling of that thing just being let loose.
Yeah.
Another really interesting tidbit that I found out is that when the Demogorgon slams the prisoner into the bar in the ceiling and knocks that bar down, that was a mistake.
Huh. Convenient. Yeah.
I know. The bar was not supposed to collapse. The DB said that they almost cut that take because something about the camera wasn't quite right, but they ultimately felt like the scene just felt more real that way and they wanted to keep it.
Yeah. No, I think it makes sense. Destruction, you know?
Yeah, I actually saw a video of like that scene being shot and you can see the guy hooked up to the wire like being slammed up there. And then you hear the thing come down and all of the other crew turn around like, what the hell was that? you can see it was like not supposed to happen. So they did want to stray from the practical Demogorgon, of course, but they still utilized a person in a green suit sometimes so that they could help the actors and the stunt people better interact with the invisible Demogorgon. They put a pole with a tennis ball on the top of the person's head so that the actors would know how tall the Demogorgon would end up being. Sometimes they would just do all the choreography with absolutely nothing in the room with them, but sometimes they would have this green-suited friend.
That would be wild to have to do that scene with no visual aid whatsoever.
I know. It's so interesting watching. I'm going to put the YouTube links in this episode description just so you can watch some of these behind the scenes things I watched.
Yeah.
So fascinating to watch like the choreography of all the stunt people and there's nothing. There's nothing there that they're fighting. Yeah.
I also love that they always use beach ball, tennis ball, tiny silver ball. Like they just always use these little like round things to.
I know. It's funny.
I see the tennis ball on the pole there.
Yes. So that's where, you know, you'd be looking if you were, you know, of course, making eye contact with the Demogorgon.
Of course.
The DBs said that the demo fight scene took about a month to finish in post-production. So that scene is about 15 seconds long, all told.
We're never going to get season 5.
I know. And it took a month.
It's crazy to think about this. Like, post-production, I mean, they got to put JCB back in that suit, I presume.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And now it's probably going to be like a different suit, too, because he's been burned.
Presumably.
Yeah, like it's going to be they're going to have to like alter the suit probably.
Yeah. Unless he's like a worm. He can just like regrow flesh.
Molting or something. Another fun tidbit I found out. David Harbour was actually supposed to just jab the Demogorgon in the mouth, but he made the choice to throw it like a javelin.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I like that. I thought that was a good touch.
And as for the Demogorgon pit itself, so the actual set, this set was built entirely from scratch in a soundstage. So this is not part of the building where they filmed most of the prison scenes. It's a completely different set.
Okay.
And the pit and the walkway above it are all built out, like literally built in plywood. It's wild. And the sky above it is a green screen. and really everything beyond it. So like anything exterior you would see mm-hmm. is green screen. Production designer Chris Trujillo said, "It's this epic set that serves as a gladiatorial arena. So our challenge was trying to figure out how to justify a space that has these oversized dimensions."
That's crazy that it was just inside.
I know. Like, they're just in a, they're in a giant garage, basically.
Yeah.
One of the things they mentioned the most in the interview, like I mentioned earlier, was that they really wanted to take advantage of all the other organic materials in the shots to make the CGI and stunt work feel a lot more real. They said that they were adamant at the beginning that everything else they could possibly do practically, they wanted to, in order to trick the eye. So the moral of this episode is that the DBs love practical effects.
That's good, though. I feel like it just makes things feel less CGI if you'd still incorporate that and don't completely rely on the CGI stuff.
Yes.
Because it's when things are over CGI that I feel like they start to feel, I don't know.
Silly.
Unrealistic. Yeah, I'm like, okay, well, that's fake and that's fake and that's fake and that's fake.
Yeah, takes you out of it a little bit.
It does. It definitely does.
Okay, the end.
Yay, that was cool. I love this stuff. I really wish that we, like, maybe we can revisit. I know there probably wasn't as much for one and two, but, like, what about all the demo dogs? Like, how did they pull that off?
I definitely did. I thought about going back and doing that. So maybe we can do that while we're waiting for season five.
Yeah. Add it to the list.
So I just wanted to end with another quote that I took from Marion Spates, another VFX supervisor, who said of the step up in VFX this season, they said, "We were playing catch up from the gun, therefore just trying to keep up with the pace of the looming deadline and deliver quality VFX we could all be proud of and serve this story was the biggest challenge for me." And did you guys know, I did not know this, did you know that they were continuing to edit the VFX 3 weeks after it dropped on Netflix? Because I did not know that.
You mean like for Papa and the Piggyback?
No, they went back and like edited what they had already released and re-released it.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I don't know what exactly they changed, but there were visual effects that were updated after the episodes had already been released.
Oh, that's like the thing that they said that they took out from season one with Jonathan, which they definitely didn't do.
They did not do any of that.
No. Wow. So they like released it, were like, that needs to be better, tweak it. And then they, I guess, just like seamlessly changed it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I know. Pretty interesting. Well, that's all I got. Sorry, this isn't a visual medium, so it's like maybe not as interesting as it could be, but I'm going to link all the YouTube videos I use. There are a lot in the episode description, so you can take a look if you want to. I highly recommend watching the Demogorgon fight breakdown. I thought that was so, so interesting.
Okay.
The production design with Chris Trujillo was really cool too. Really all of them, so definitely recommend.
Love this. It's so cool. I just like how this gives us a different perspective than what we see.
Me too. And honestly, yeah, like I said, I think it really helped me appreciate the character of Vecna a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Just seeing like the concept art and kind of understanding the DB's like intention for him, you know, to have this character that can vocalize his intentions and his motives and stuff. Like I get it a little bit more.
Yeah, and it makes me, I think, appreciate, too, like, the entire process from start to finish, knowing that Vecna was a concept since 2019.
Yeah.
So what that tells me is that they were already, like, writing, storyboarding, coming up with all of this stuff for season four during season three.
Right, which means that, you know, season five was probably already figured out at least partway through season four.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for listening. And we are going to post what we can on Instagram. There's definitely more images here than Instagram will allow, but
yes,
we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Okay.
Well, that was fun. And next week we have another fun episode, which I'm excited for.
Oh, we have Jopper. I need a title. I don't have one. All right, we'll do it.
All right. See you all next week, everybody.
All right.
In the meantime.
Stay strange.
Stay strange.
To keep in touch and stay informed, join us on our StarCourt Study Hall Discord server and follow us on Instagram at StarCourt Study Hall.